Hey there, and welcome to episode 22 of the Dumb Leaders podcast. Today we're dissecting the Australian cricket ball tampering scandal and what we can learn from that as leaders. Stay tuned. Hey there, it's Tony here, and welcome to this week's episode, episode 22 of the Dumb Leaders podcast. Today we are going to dissect the scandal that has infatuated, outraged, and created hysteria here in Australia. Our Australian cricket captain, Steve Smith, and two other players admitted to cheating by tampering with the ball. It's been an outrage as our Australian cricket team is held quite rightly to be role models for many of our young players. But we woke up on Sunday to the news that batsman Cameron Bancroft had been charged with ball tampering. And at a press conference with Captain Steve Smith, they had admitted to a wider plot to tamper with the ball, which had been part of a collaborative group of Dave Warner, the vice captain, Steve Smith, the captain, and ultimately Cameron Bancroft had been the player chosen to do the actual tampering. Now, the evidence was collected, and the evidence was pretty clear-cut because it was broadcast around the world and broadcast at the ground by way of the big screen. So the broadcasting company, the TV company that was telecasting the game, collected the evidence. It was pretty hard to refute. Evidence was collected, and ultimately guilt was admitted by the players. Now, some would say Australia has reacted well out of proportion for what this is, and I guess this is where part of our leadership lesson is. There's a number of lessons that we'll talk about, we'll learn from. But to gain an understanding of this from listeners from around the world, the position of the Australian cricket captain in many ways in our country is second only to, in terms of status, to the Prime Minister of our country. It's held in high regard. And when we think about cricket as the gentleman's game, which gets a little bit muddied over recent times, but cricket is routinely seen or expressed as the gentleman's game. Now, ball tampering is a serious issue for cricket. And in many sports, in fact, I mean, when you think about the furore about the New England Patriots and Deflategate, for example, any players that attempt to gain an advantage by tweaking with the ball, tweaking with official equipment, it does tend to create a furore. And in cricket, it gets a little bit muddied even more. Because in cricket, we're allowed to shine the ball. And most teams and most bowlers will want one side of the ball that's shinier than the other. Because through the air, the ball will tend to swing. So we're allowed to shine up one side, but we're not allowed to dull, muddy, dirty, or otherwise interfere with the other side. We're not allowed to interfere with the stitching in the ball. We're not allowed to go out of our way, outside of the normal wear and tear of the game, to create or tamper with the other side of the ball. So we're allowed to shine one side of the ball, and most teams do that. And I think every bowler I ever played cricket with or against would shine the ball. And we're allowed to let that other side of the ball get dirtied and muddied through the natural course of the game. But we're not allowed to interfere with it. And the reason why players do want to interfere with it and dirty that side up or get it a bit rough is, in absolute contradiction to many of the laws of physics, create some reverse swing. So the ball swings late and it swings reverse to what it should be swinging and catches the batsman out. And often teams will pick up a snick that will go through to the keeper or to the slips fieldman. For an Australian cricket captain to admit to cheating, as ball tampering is, has created this huge hornet's nest in our country. You know, Sunday saw our former captain, Michael Clarke, grilled on a national sports show on everything from cheating, culture, a win-at-all-costs attitude, and ultimately whether he was available to stand in as captain for when the inevitable happened and Smith would be stood down. Now, in my estimation, Clarke handled himself pretty well. He was shocked, he was disappointed, but he was quite firm in respect of we need to allow the investigation to run its course. And at the moment, you know, he was paid to be a commentator. He's not paid to be, he's not playing cricket as such at a national level. So he deflected that question on whether he would stand in as captain quite admirably on the first day when emotions are high. Now, we've had commentary from all angles. We've had emotions expressed, and many in the wider community expressing surprise at how big this is. We've had experts with opinions. We've had mums dramatically telling the world their kids are now asking how to tamper with cricket balls to give them the advantage. Many would proclaim it as a level of hysterics. But unfortunately, this is reality, people. This is reality. People act with emotions. Now, whether those emotions are justified or not, people act with emotions. So ball tampering. Let's talk about ball tampering. One of the people I saw on LinkedIn, in my LinkedIn network, was really quite adamant that, hey, guys, this is just a game. And ultimately, if you checked on Wikipedia, you can see all the previous incidents of ball tampering. And most of them have been met with quite what you would call a lukewarm response. You know, there's been bans for matches, there have been fines of match payments, and usually a bit of an initial outcry, but it dies down relatively quickly. And for a sport like cricket, where we've seen allegations and issues around match fixing and betting issues, ball tampering could potentially be seen by many as a relatively minor offence. But the Australian captain to admit to cheating, which is what many people saw it as, and the outcry from Australia was immediate. Australia has always prided itself on playing a tough brand of cricket, but fair. And they're always quite vocal when other nations were caught doing things outside of the game. But this time the shoe was on the other foot, and Australian cricket was firmly caught in the crosshairs. Everyone had an opinion, from the Prime Minister to the President of the Sports Commission to the lady at the checkout counter, to you, to me, to everyone in between. Everyone had an opinion on just how tragic this was. Now, the CEO, James Sutherland, faced the baying media crowd around lunchtime on the Sunday and, in all honesty, reacted with very little composure. He was obviously very nervous. He seemed like a deer stuck in the spotlight. He showed very little personal response. He relied quite heavily on the process moving forward. Quite shockingly, he hadn't spoken to anyone in South Africa where this incident had taken place. And that was really quite beyond belief, to be quite honest, that the CEO of a national sporting body would not have rung to find out what the hell was going on. Now, initially, all three players were stood down from the next test while an investigation took place. So Sutherland sent over an integrity team, which were ultimately then joined by himself a day or so later, when, you know, ultimately the media was saying, the media really was creating a lot of the actions that involved, because the outcry amongst the media and generally then amongst the people was quite shocking, and that not enough was being done, and that there was a lack of belief in the actions that were going to take place. So the outcome from the investigation was publicised yesterday on Wednesday. And the outcome, so Wednesday the 28th of March, with Dave Warner and Steve Smith getting 12-month bans from the game. right? So they're only allowed to play club cricket. They're not allowed to play cricket of any consequence in terms of for their state or for their country or internationally for that matter. Warner has also had the stamp never to be considered for a leadership position marked against his name, while Smith has been told and found that he will be eligible again for a leadership position after 24 months. And that's 2 years. So 12 months out of the game, 2 years out of a leadership position. Bancroft, Cameron Bancroft, the batsman, received a 9-month ban, and you know, many question that, but you know, at the end of the day, he was the junior party in all this, and even though he was the one that was actually ball tampering, very heavily influenced by the two leaders within the team, you would imagine. And you know, right throughout history, we've seen people that just do their job or do what they're told, and you know, ultimately, the leader is the one that ultimately has to have the accountability. And I just said ultimately far too many times, but you, I'm hoping you get the drift. So now, the other thing that came to light during the investigation that was that Dave Warner, the vice captain, was actually the instigator and the developer of the plan, as he was called. And the investigation found that out, that Dave Warner, the vice captain, was the instigator. He was the developer of the plan, and he was the one that directed Bancroft to do the task. The other thing that came to light is that it was initially told to everyone in the world that it was yellow tape that was, and with a little bit of debris from the side of the pitch. And then it came to light that it wasn't actually yellow tape, that it was sandpaper. So just a minor detail that was that came to light. So sandpaper is vastly different in many people's eyes to just a little piece of adhesive tape. And Steve Smith, the captain, was ultimately found that he knew about the plan, but he didn't do anything to stop it. So let's just go through that again. 12-month bans for Warner and Smith, 9-month ban from Bancroft. Warner will never, ever be considered for a leadership position in Australian cricket again. And Smith will become eligible again after 24 months. They're prohibited from the Indian 2020 Cricket League. They're prohibited from playing any cricket outside of club cricket. So it's a huge impost. It's a huge ban. Now, the outcry in the media seemed to be satisfied with that. There was a huge baying for blood. And the media, for in general sense, are satisfied with the outcome. But I must say, many still insist it's a massive overreaction. So we've got this huge emotional outcry of justice and injustice, and then we've got this whole range of people are saying, what's the big deal here? You know, seriously. So we've got two very firm camps here, which we do in so many ways around the world. So what I want to do now is, you know, that's given you a bit of a snapshot of the situation. Let's look at the leadership failings and then how we can learn from that. So this is a classic case of dumb leaders in the news. So this is why we do what we do. Let's not necessarily, everyone's going to have their own opinions and judgments on what happened, right? And perceptions, beliefs, whether it was too harsh or not harsh enough or hysterical or what have you. Everyone's going to have that. Now, fair enough. But let's look at what we can learn from this. Because even though the outcry may be perceived by some as just over the top, the reality is it happened. That's the reality. So there is some leadership stuff that we need to learn. If you want to be a better leader and not find yourself in these positions, there's stuff you need to learn. So let's look at it. First up, let's look at influence. Now, John Maxwell says leadership is influence, nothing more, nothing less. And he shares a story of one of his first church congregations where the actual leader, the person that held the influence, was a farmer called Claude. It's in his 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership. If you want to read about that, it's a really telling example of how a leader can create influence through influencing the one who's got the influence. But it's fairly clear from the results of the investigation that Warner was the one that had the influence. Now, Smith may have been the leader, he may have been the public face, he may have had the title. But based on what has occurred, didn't have the stamp of leadership to stop the plot. Now, tellingly here as well was the fact that Smith refused to name Warner in the press conference. He talked about, in general terms, the leadership team. He said he's not going to tell the names, etc., etc. So there was a general reluctance for him to come out and say, oh, it was Dave Warner. And understandably so, that's a little bit Australian. We don't dob in a mate. But at the end of the day, there's also some behavioural stuff here that we're seeing from the captain, from the leader, that is really quite concerning from a leadership aspect. So he refused to name Warner in the press conference. Now, Warner is obviously a dominant personality, you know, and opinions are often divided on dominant personalities. They can often intimidate and manipulate uncertain or secure leaders. In a general sense, that's what dominant personalities do. They'll often intimidate, and they'll intimidate uncertain or insecure leaders. Now, as a leader, you have to be aware of who holds the influence within the team, because the person that has the influence is the effective leader. Let me repeat that. The person that has the influence is the effective leader. So in this case, Warner hatched the plan, Warner directed Bancroft to do it, and Smith didn't stop it. So where was the leadership? Where was the strength of leadership? Because it was needed. There was some strength of leadership that was needed that was just missing. So as a leader, be mindful of whoever holds influence in your team, your business, your company, because they are the one that are the effective leader. So a colleague of mine also speaks often about successful businesses. And so the success of a business is at the mercy of the lowest common denominator. The success of a business is at the mercy of the lowest common denominator. So if you've got someone standing on your front lines that is not the epitome of what your company is all about, what your business is all about, what your team is all about, and you're allowing that, that's a disservice to you as a leader. And it's a disservice to you as you in your business, because you are minimizing the results based around that one person. That person is setting the tone for the entire company. The success of a business is held to ransom by your lowest common denominator. And in this case, whoever held the influence determines the result. So in this case, Warner held the influence. He determined the result. Now, if you allow influence to build where you don't want it, you're simply not doing your job as a leader. And there are certain ways that you can create influence in that situation. There's certain ways that you need to stand up. But one of those ways is you need to have strength in your own endeavor, strength in your own capacity and belief in yourself to be able to stand up and put a stop to something that is simply just not part, should not be part of the game, should not be part of your business, should not be part of the company that you're in. So it's about having that strength of purpose as a leader to be able to stand up when it counts. And in this case, it wasn't able to be done. So influence was certainly not with the captain. The influence was with the vice captain. The second thing I want to talk about is integrity. Now, this has been a real roller coaster ride. Even the investigation, the initial investigation, uncovered the yellow tape was actually sandpaper. So even though when the world was giving Smith and Bancroft some credit for being honest at an initial press conference, there's also a chain of thought that they probably didn't expect to think it was as bad as what it was. They might have picked up a match fee payment fine or a loss of a game. They obviously didn't think it through and didn't understand what the result and outcry was. But even at that press conference, when they were given some credit for being honest, it turned out they weren't. It turned out that the yellow tape became sandpaper. And that's just a huge blow to integrity. You know, it's clear that all three now have integrity questions, as their behaviours have indicated a complete lack of it. Their sentences certainly indicate a punishment for them for that. And when you consider the loss of income, the loss of sponsors, the loss of other cricketing opportunities, this integrity slip for all parties is, you know, is calculated in the millions of dollars. That's a big loss for integrity. But, and I guess that's the current cost of the situation. When we look to the future cost and the resultant slur that's always going to be there on reputation and character, that's harder for them to manage into the future. The role model that Steve Smith was will never shine as brightly again. And he will always have some suffrage on this one incident for the rest of his days. It will be brought up in any questionable moments. He'll be reminded about it potentially daily, and he will live with it daily. That's a huge thing. That's a huge impost because of an integrity slip. Now, to a leader, integrity is almost everything. Some would say everything. When a leader's integrity is questioned, they simply cannot lead as effectively as what they may have. So let's look outside and see. And let's just take a step back and look outside at everything else that was muddied up because of a lack of integrity in this particular instance, right? There were suddenly questions raised whether this was a one-off incident. Now, the media reported that the South African players were claiming it had been happening all series and that they had actually asked the host broadcaster to try and find out what was happening. No doubt, in my mind, there are people already going through, trawling through the footage to look for incidences where it had happened in the past. Now, human nature is one that once we've been lied to, once integrity has been breached, everything gets questioned. So once we've been lied to, once integrity has been breached, everything gets questioned. Even our Ashes victory has now been tainted by the perception that this was happening prior. So think about that. Even our Ashes victory, the Ashes victory that was held up as magnificent, is now under perception and tainted. See, once you lie to me, everything gets harder. We look for proof that what you say is true instead of the trust that maybe we held before. Imagine how much harder your job would be as a manager, as a leader, if everything you say was questioned and that your people had to verify everything, that it was true. Lack of integrity leads to a lack of trust. Lack of trust leads to perceptions, rumours, blame storms and witch hunts, all of which is incredibly visual in this particular aspect. Everything gets muddy. Everything costs more. Everything slows down. You know, Stephen Covey Jr. wrote a magnificent book, The Speed of Trust, and it's absolutely so true. When you have trust in an organization, and if you have trust between business partners or business companies or business to business, everything is quicker and everything costs less because there's trust. The minute trust goes out the wall, out the door, everything costs more and everything slows down. So everything gets muddy. Now, everyone has an opinion about the cricket scandal. We've seen it. And the same thing happens in the corporate world. Everyone has an opinion. And within your business, within your company, there's rumours, innuendo, and everything happening right now. Right now. Within your team. And that's all driven if someone has a different perception or if integrity has been breached. So your core value of integrity is one you as a leader should hold tighter than everything else. Because when it's compromised, It just turns everything, everything. When it's compromised, everything turns into that famous big brown steaming pile of crap. Your core value of integrity is one you as a leader should hold tighter than everything else. And in this case, decisions were made to breach the laws of the game to get a competitive advantage. They breached their integrity. They lied. They cheated. Now let's look at culture. Now the perception from the incident included many calls for coach Darren Lehman and the CEO James Sutherland to be sacked. Seeing as they, or believing that they, were indeed the keepers of the culture of the Australian cricket team, and there's a lot of argument for that. The coach, especially the CEO, maybe less so, but importantly, both of those were seen to be the keepers of the culture of the Australian cricket team. And it's a culture that has increasingly become more toxic, and it's been compiled with a win-at-all-costs attitude. Now, Australia would no doubt cringe at the extent of sledging if we heard everything that was said on the field in all its glory. We certainly cringed at some of the bully boy scenes that we've seen, and the recent one that comes to mind is when Dave Warner's reacted with emotion to some quite harsh and unjust, or you would imagine some harsh and unjust sledging coming out of the South African team. But it's not a good incident. It's not a good look. There have been instances before, and these instances before were pointing the way to the ultimate crisis that came about. You know, a holier than thou, a bigger than the game scenario approach attitude was one that is being believed now by more and more people. And that these instances were leading and pointing the way to the one that came about. Now, effective performance culture nips behaviour in the bud that doesn't belong. And in this case, the win-at-all-costs attitude brought to the fore these behaviours that we were starting to see within the Australian cricket team. Now, the lessons in corporate life and the history of it highlights that there's people, business is littered with stories of people that have fudged books, book profits they didn't have, scammed people, dummied up compliance stuff. The list is completely endless. And probably the ones that got caught are probably in the minority to the ones that don't get caught. So the quest and the stress and the pressure for results at all costs is sometimes the reason behind some of it. And I only say sometimes. It's not always the case. Some people are just dumb. Some people are just wanting to better themselves. Some people have that self-interest above all else. So sometimes that's part of the problem. But if you want to create a performance culture, you nip the behaviours as soon as they become evident in the bud. Now, you want to create and you want to build a performance culture where everyone is striving to achieve the best, their best, and producing the best way forward and the best outcomes possible for their businesses and their teams. Now, a win-it-all attitude creates cheats. And we see this more so in the sporting arena because it's front page, back page news, salary caps, drugs. But the question I want to ask is it happening in your team? So, does the pressure to perform create the opportunity for your people to fudge, lie and cheat their way? Do you have the necessary checks and balances in place to monitor that that's not happening? Are your people building leadership capability and with that, the core of leadership capability, that core of character and integrity that we've talked about? If the culture is toxic, can I tell you, you have to look at the leader. You have to look at the leader. If you are unhappy with the culture within teams, the first place you need to look is within the is at the leader. If you're unhappy with the culture within your company, you have to look at yourself. That's the reality. Because it's coming from, everything comes from the chair. That's something I was told in my very early days of leading teams. It comes from the chair. The performance from the team comes from the way I lead them, the way I energize them, the way I motivate them. But if it's a bad culture, that all laziness, half-assed attitudes. It all comes from the chair. So the leadership lessons from this debacle cannot be ignored. The spotlight of sport created the outcry. Many commentators have agreed here. The same things happen in business daily on varying scales. And unless it's a major event, it never gets reported. But it happens every day. It's in your business. You know, a stock count fudge, an invoice that gets misplaced, assets overstated, documents and inspections backdated. Just to name a few, it's happening daily, and the question I want to ask is it in your team? Was it a massive overreaction? You know, the results was the response from the outcry, and that's something we need to understand. When integrity is breached and people feel that they've been harshly done by, there will be an emotional response, there will be an outcry. And we need to understand that as part of our role as the leader. You know, we can't expect to be forgiven just because we're sorry or we have remorse about how something went down. People hold on to stuff. And the outcry that we've seen absolutely is indicative of that. So if you do bad things to your team, if you do bad things in your business, don't expect to be able to say, look, I'm sorry, and get away with it. People will hold grudges. People will be emotional, and there will be an outcry. It may only be an outcry within your team. It may not be front page news, but the lesson is there for us. The outcry will happen. Now, ball tampering obviously now sits in the echelon of drug cheats. The precedence has now been set, you know. And while it is, someone is already looking at a way on how to do it again and not get caught. That's our nature. That's the nature of human beings. The problem will occur again without a doubt. So as a leader, learn the lessons for you and stay true to your core values and your core integrity. It's so vital. I talk about values-based leadership all the time, but it's critical. It's absolutely critical. You know, I've learned so many lessons whenever through my corporate career, and many of the stories that we're sharing over at the Dumb Leaders Handbook are personal stories of stuff that I've either done, stuff that I've witnessed, or stuff that I've seen. So, you know, there's a real challenge here. You know, we learn from our dumb mistakes and we move on and become better leaders. Now, the last leadership lesson that I just want to very quickly touch on, there's been some really expert commentary around this. So there's probably people more, a better place to talk about it than potentially myself. But I do want to talk about it. CEO James Sutherland was understandably nervous when he faced the media scrum on Sunday. His presence did not exude any confidence or belief that this inquiry was in good hands. He was noticeably nervous, and probably, I would suggest, a little bit ill-prepared. Now, as a leader, your presence counts. Your calmness amongst the chaos, your confidence to stand tall, to fight injustice, to build momentum, your presence is as a superhero. And you've got to believe that. You know, the fact that he hadn't spoken to anyone in South Africa defied logic, it defied belief, and really pointed the way as to why so many people had issues with this. You know, how serious was this person treating it when he hadn't even talked to the people that were involved? You know, you must have presence. You, my friend, you're a leader. You are a superhero. You've got to act and you have to behave like one, especially in times of crisis. Your people are looking for you for that calmness, that confidence to get their way through. And if you don't believe you're a superhero, it's very hard to suddenly put on the mask. Hey, thanks for listening to episode 22 of the Dumb Leaders Podcast. A little bit longer than normal and a little bit more topical than normal. I hope that you've taken it in for what it is. It's a real opportunity for us to understand the leadership lessons that we can learn from the leadership crisis that engulfed Australian cricket this week. Until next week, I'll see you then. Bye for now.